are homeless. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for tuning in today. The customer is always right. Whatever happened to that approach to customer relations? Well, of course, the customer is not always right, but we would like some respect. This afternoon, we're going to go inside the multi-billion-dollar global customer service industry with journalist Emily Yellen. We'll talk with her about its history, how it works or doesn't, and why things can go so wrong. Emily Yellen is the author of the new book, Your Call Is Not That Important to Us, Customer Service and What It Reveals About Our World and Our Lives. Emily Yellen says her goal in reporting and writing this book was to seek out the humanity and reason behind customer service experiences that many people find to be inhuman and nonsensical. Her efforts, she says, were grounded in the idea that it is important for those of us who are customers to know more about the workings of global customer service and its ever-increasing impact on us all as we try to navigate successfully through our daily lives. Emily Yellen is a longtime contributor to the New York Times and the author of Our Mother's War. Her new book, Your Call Is Not That Important to Us, is published by the Free Press. Listeners, join us with your thoughts and observations, your questions and comments. Your call is important to us. I invite your phone calls for Emily Yellen. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. One more note, you'll find our guest, Emily Yellen, online at www.emilyyellen.com. And her last name is spelled Y-E-L-L-I-N, EmilyYellen.com. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Emily Yellen, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful topic.
Oh, thank you. Well, it certainly touches us all.
Yeah, it sure does. Who isn't a customer, right?
Right.
So we make about 43 billion calls to customer service per year. As Americans, do we really make that many calls?
That is the best estimate I could find, and that's actually based on 2007 numbers. So the idea is it's probably gone up a bit. Customer service calls include when you call for your bank balance or your credit card balance. It includes all sorts of things. But yes, we do make a lot of calls, and I think we're not aware of some of what we do that's considered customer service.
Yeah. Why do we feel so strongly about customer service?
Well, I think when you need help and someone is supposed to help you and they don't, or they ignore you, or they make you feel, you know, like you're not important, hence the title, I think that gets at something pretty basic. It's, you know, our pride, our dignity, and really, who doesn't want to be respected? So I think that it's something that companies do, some do well, but the ones who do it poorly really get at basic things in us that, that bring out some, what I've learned is called customer rage. You know, and so it's just like any kind of personal relationship, but on some level it's even worse because we don't know these actual people on the end of the line who are the face of these companies, and I think we tend to take it very personally, even if we're not the type of person who generally takes many things personally.
Yeah. What gets us going?
Well, the three things I found out that everybody hates. I mean, I don't think this is going to come as news to anybody, and there are plenty more, but kind of the top three that always show up. One is waiting on hold, way too long, being put on hold. Another is talking to agents who don't have who don't speak English well or can't understand our English, you know, with accents or just their level of English. And then third is the automated system.
Oh.
You have to press one or say one or all of that and have to, can't get to a human being, you know, so that they can then maybe not help us.
And all three of these things are driven in part by economics.
Yes. There's I've really searched and tried to figure out what's the economic, what's the price behind this, and what, you know, because businesses, that's what the bottom line is looking at the financial effects. And the best numbers, any numbers you come up with on this are, you know, vague, but I tried to be conservative in what I put together, and the best numbers I could find were, and depending on the industry, were about $7.50 is how much it costs for a live American-based customer service agent to take a call. About $2.35 is how much it costs for a foreign outsourced agent to take a call, and about $0.32 is how much it costs for an automated system to answer your call.
Okay. So for Amtrak, that's really important.
Yes. Well, it, you know, they get, I think it's, they get about 18 million calls per year, and that's about 50,000 calls per day. So just Amtrak alone, and any company, you know, the, some of the larger telecommunications companies get, they have 50 million customers. And so, it, you know, that volume of call, it is actually almost impossible to have human beings answer every single one of those calls. So there is some use for automated systems, for instance. The best companies, though, are the ones who look at that price and look at the costs and look at the kinds of calls and really do a deep analysis of the kinds of calls that come in and then design their system to handle it. So one of the companies I went to and spent some time at was FedEx. And, you know, if you're calling to get a drop-off location and you just give a zip code, you don't actually need to speak to a human being. And, in fact, if you think about the agent on the other end of the line, those calls are kind of not that interesting to take either. So that serves everybody if you can just, you know, punch in or speak or go to the website and give a zip code and get a location. But then, and then if you're calling at 3 a.m. about something, you want to talk to a human being and, you know, maybe you're not going to get an American, but at 3 a.m. you just want to talk to somebody. That can be helpful. And then, you know, that can be a way to handle it. And then there are those calls that you really do need to speak to somebody because it's a complicated issue. So they've really engineered their customer service, for instance, between outsourcing and an automated system and the website and then the live agents.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Julie. She's the voice of Amtrak when you call in to make a reservation.
She is. Yes, I actually was saying I used to take the train between Memphis and Chicago, and I came through Champaign-Urbana, and I didn't have to speak to Julie at that time. It was many years ago, but if I were to do that same thing now, I would call Amtrak, and the automated system is a woman's voice, and she comes on, and I can actually do an impersonation if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, do it.
She says, "Hi, my name is Julie. Welcome to Amtrak. I'm your automated agent. Now, let's get started."
Let's then, be friends.
Yeah. And then you give her your the city you're leaving from and what city are you going to. And you she can actually the system can actually understand all of that. And I had the opportunity, I went to Boston where that system was created, and all of the people who design it, it's a team of linguists, psychologists, MIT computer scientists who have PhDs, and you know, theater directors, engineers, and they all create this system that is based on artificial intelligence. And Julie is a woman who is a voice actress in Boston, and her actual name is Julie. They named the system after her. And she talked to me about what it's like to be Julie and to record those things, and she said she had to record the name of every Amtrak station in the country. Among many other things.
Mm. Including my mistake.
Right, right. My mistake.
My mistake.
And so, exactly. You're good. We could probably do this together. So, yeah, she said there were a lot of different ways to say I'm sorry they came up with. And then the computer has to be taught. This is another favorite story they told me, that the computer has to be taught to understand people. So, for instance, just the word yes, there are so many different ways that you can say that. You can say yeah, uh-huh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So the computer has to be taught all of that. Mm. The Boston designers did a system for Bell South, and they did this great system, state-of-the-art, cutting-edge, put it into play, and the female voice that answered the phone, they had forgotten something, and so it didn't work. And what it was they hadn't taught the computer how to understand yes, ma'am.
Mm.
Because they were in Boston, and this was for Bell
mm-hmm.
South in the South, and so they had to do a quick fix, and they taught it. But I thought that was pretty funny. So there's a lot of interesting things about how those systems are done and what it kind of, you know, the regional differences it reflects and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, last summer or last spring, I had to have a serviceman come and repair our stove.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very impressive how this all worked. Because they called me in the morning and they told me he'll be there, or the employee will be there between the hours of noon and 3,
mm-hmm.
which is that's a reasonable window for me.
Right.
So, okay, I can deal with that. I had the day off and, you know, I thought, well, I can be in the house. I got plenty of things to do in the house between that. And then about a half an hour before he showed up, he called me mm-hmm. and he said, I'm on my way. And then he got there, and he was very nice, and everything went very well. And then he had a system. He plugged his computer into our phone line,
mm-hmm.
and then he had to deal with an automated phone answering system to check in.
At his own company?
Yeah. And it was terrible. He had a terrible time.
Right.
I just felt so bad for him. And so here's part of the equation is going so well. But then, you know, it kind of fell down there for a while. So it took him longer to get that done than it should
right.
have.
Well, that is actually a great example of something I learned about, which is a new trend, and it's a hopeful trend in the customer service industry, which cuts across all industries. And that's the idea of the customer experience. So traditionally, customer service is thought of as just sort of something that happens at the end, and the company looks at it as, you know, a necessary evil, a cost. It's something where, you know, they do this product development, they do sales, they do marketing, and then, oh, yeah, customer service. But now people are starting to realize in the more progressive corporations that customer service is marketing. You know, it is sort of the customer service is the new marketing. And so the idea is you, instead of just saying customer service is handling problems after something goes wrong, it's the whole experience that the customer has from the very beginning, you know, maybe even hearing about advertising the first time they hear about a company, all the way through. And the idea is to make that entire experience seamless. So you had some good parts of that experience, but there were parts of the system that are broken, and it, you know, it's particularly interesting that the employee himself obviously is a good person and obviously wanted to do a good job, and he was doing well until he had to run into problems from his own company.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found that that's really important, is that the company, the way that a company supports its customer service workers and its customer service function
mm-hmm.
is the way that they think of their customers and the way that they treat their customers.
Yeah.
And so when something goes wrong, you know, if you had been on the phone with that person and he had run into that kind of problem, you might not have been quite as sympathetic because you wouldn't have seen him in person. You wouldn't have seen what he went through. But when I went to these call centers and saw the people working hard and, you know, really caring and still running into problems within their own company,
mm-hmm.
you know, you start to get a little more empathy for them. And the real bottom line that I came away with is anytime you have bad customer service, even if the person is particularly rude, it's really a reflection of that CEO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really a reflection of what's valued at that company and how those employees are measured. And if they aren't given the incentives to treat you right, then they won't do it. And so, you know, it's not, we want to blame that person who was rude to us, but I've learned that as infuriated as I can even get, and I still do sometimes, it's really worth thinking of it that way.
Yeah. Journalist Emily Yellen is our guest this afternoon. She's the author of Your Call Is Not That Important to Us, Customer Service and What It Reveals About Our World and Our Lives. My name is Celeste Quinn. We have a listener waiting for us on line one. Let's not keep them on hold any longer. Urbana, good afternoon.
Hi. I just want to refer back to Julie again. If you remember, I think I heard it on NPR, an exchange between Julie trying to make a date with, I think it was Tom.
Yes.
And it got very nasty because it was very polite in the beginning. And then it got very nasty because I think one could only go by train and one by plane.
Right. Yeah, that's a famous parody that they did. And Tom is the voice for United Airlines. And these are actually two voice actors, an actor and actress in Boston. So they did this really pretty funny thing for Valentine's Day. And they were on a date and they were getting along well. But their responses were, if you like this, you know, wine, please say yes or no, you know, and that kind of thing. And they did a whole really funny exchange, but in the end they had a fight because one of them said that they had to go by plane and the other had to go by train. And it's very funny. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And we've got another call coming in on line two, and that listener is ready to go. Good afternoon. Line
hi.
Two, hi.
I find the topic very interesting. And when you start talking about the costs for a human answering versus a machine, but did your analysis go into what it actually costs the company when they lose a customer who gets frustrated in that kind of customer-type relationship?
That's a great question. And, yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes to and what, again, you know, the more progressive companies have come to see, and over the time that these systems have been available, you know, the first impulse was just to look at those numbers I quoted. But yes, now companies are looking at the fact, and it really has been established as a fact, that losing a customer and trying to get a new one costs a lot more to the company than keeping the customers that they have and keeping them happy and loyal. And you know, the idea that you have to call back a number of times as well. Another idea that's going around is the idea that you, instead of measuring customer service agents on how many calls they take per hour or that sort of thing, which obviously causes them to get you off the phone as quickly as possible, they're measured on what's called first call resolution. And so the idea would be that if it takes 20 minutes, but you finish the whole, you know, you solve the whole problem in that one call, and then the customer doesn't have to call back three times, and you don't have to do three different calls and three different agents possibly and a supervisor, which would probably take 20 minutes of their time and probably more for the person waiting. That's really has become part of the equation now. Not everywhere, and I'm sure we've all called places where it isn't, but that's a great point.
Could I just follow up with
sure.
a personal situation? I recently got a letter from a credit card company that I had a credit card with, and I'm like most people, I want to be very liquid right now given economic circumstances, so I paid off all of my credit cards, but I was holding those credit cards just so that I could have lines of credit. Well, on this particular card, I hadn't used for probably, a year. And then I got this letter telling me that they were dropping me as a cardholder. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand that. And I just found it, you know, the height of hypocrisy to say, here's a customer who has paid you off. I don't owe you anything, and
right.
You're dropping me as a customer.
You know, that goes a little bit beyond my realm, but I can tell you this. I think that some of that, there is a trend now among some companies to look at the value of a customer and look at whether that customer is bringing in, you know, spending more money with the company. And I'm not going to say that that's the situation there, because who knows, right? But what I will say is there's another example, a company, we all know the company Sprint, and they sent out letters in the summer of 2007 where they essentially fired some customers. And it was because those customers called too much and were taking up too much of their time. And so they told them, you know, essentially they said, we're just not that into you anymore. They said, you know, we think that you could find a service provider that could serve your needs better. And they got horrific publicity, obviously, for that. And they were already losing customers. So, you know, one of the things that has come out from that and other incidences, and you know what you're describing might have something to do with the economy as well, so that's where it's a little beyond my realm in this subject, but is the idea that, you know, these companies where they're starting to lose customers, customer service is a leading indicator sometimes of the health of a company. So people who work in customer service and hear what customers are thinking and hear about customers who are angry and leaving, and, you know, you've now come on a radio program and mentioned this. You didn't mention the company, but that's okay. But, you know, that is now people in customer service are starting to see the financial health of their company way before the stock prices reflect that. So that's an interesting thing about the importance of customer service, I think.
Okay.
I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, is the caller still there?
Yes, but that young lady is my exact point, and yes, it does. I suggest to you that it definitely is a part of your thesis, and that is customer service.
Right. No, it is. Yeah. It is.
You're getting rid of a customer because you want bad customers so that you can charge them the outrageous penalties and interest rates that the law allows you to charge.
No, and you're right. It does reflect, especially the way they did it, to just do it without really talking to you or explaining to you anything about it. And obviously, it's enraged you, and I appreciate that. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I, too, have received a letter recently from a credit card company saying, you know, you don't need this much credit, so we're going to lower your limit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little miffed.
Right.
But, you know, I get it in a way. I mean, they want a loan. They want people who are going to...
What I meant by it being out of my realm is I think some of that specifically has to do with the credit crisis now more than it does with some, you know, customer service policy. But still, even when they do something like that, as you say, it is customer service, and they need to look at it as customer service whenever they have to contact the customer with good or bad news.
Right. This might be a little also outside the realm of our discussion today, but in a sense, could we see the misdeeds, the misfeasance, malfeasance leading to the crash in the financial sector as a betrayal of customers?
Yeah. I mean, I've thought a little bit about that as this was happening, because the thing I really came away from, from this whole thing, this whole book and my time working on it, was that everything that happens to a customer is a direct reflection of the CEO. And part of how I'm able to say that with authority is I've spoken to CEOs, big, you know, FedEx, a company called Zappos.com, and a couple of other companies. And the companies whose CEOs, you know, have a sense of customer service and look at customer service as what they do are the companies who are then, you know, probably being more fiscally responsible in other ways. And so a company, again, like Sprint, was having problems with their customers, and they were so concerned with, they did an acquisition, a merger and acquisition, and, you know, various decisions they made for their stockholders and for, you know, and not necessarily regarding their customers, and they started losing customers. And so I think that the basic distrust that we have had, and now probably more so have, towards corporations is something that customer service has to address. And I had people in customer service, very committed professionals who work in customer service, say to me at big corporations saying, you know, we recognize that there is a distrust between corporations and customers, and it's our job to work very hard and do everything we can to, you know, restore that trust or keep that trust if they have it already. And that comes down to some very basic things like how they train their employees and, again, what they measure and value, you know, in their employees when they're dealing with customers.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones and take some more calls for our guest, Emily Yellen, author of Your Call Is Not That Important to Us. Next, we go to a listener on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi. Actually, Celeste is probably one of the best. So if this career thing doesn't work out for you, you do very well in customer service because you have a wonderful personality.
Thank you very much.
Actually, where I was impressed, I'm not usually too impressed in terms of these automated systems, but the one for the converter box, what I did is I went online. It was this whole process, you know, address and a whole bit. And then I also read that, well, I think there was this old thing that maybe they wouldn't have enough coupon or whatever. And I thought, I'm just going to call in. So yesterday I called in, and I'll tell you what, it was one of the best processes, you know, well, certainly, you know, whether it's in Spanish or English, you know, one and two and all that kind of stuff. But the next step was, and also does it go, you know, in terms of access, you know, the mail delivered to the home, that kind of thing. But very simple. You just put in your phone number. It checked in regard to, you know, the address. Is this your address? And the whole bit, and the whole bit. And you just, your thing, and they said within, it was going to be mailed on a certain date and within 3 weeks and all that. I've never had such it was easier than doing it online, quite frankly, so pretty impressive.
That's great. And you mean the converter box for the switch over to HD?
Yeah, very impressive because a lot of them, you know, you
the digital.
The whole thing and you just want to give up, you know.
Right. Well, you know, that's something I learned too was that, and I've now noticed it myself, and I'm glad you mentioned this because there are systems that are well designed. And I actually went to a convention of the people who design those systems, and they have entire sessions about, you know, what prompt should they use on this when you want a customer to do this or that or whatever. And they think long and hard about the words they use and that sort of thing. So it's really about design. A lot of customer experience, you know, the customer experience part of this is really about the design. And so what we want, and you just said it, what we want is to be able to get the job done. And I don't think we care as much as we say whether it's a human or not. We just want to get our thing, you know, whatever it is we need done, we want it to be done. And the reason we want a human is that the minute that a machine messes up or you can't tell it what you need it to hear, you know, or do, then you think, okay, at least I could speak to a human. So those automated systems, you know, even the people who design them will admit they're nowhere near the capacity of a human to do simple tasks. So that's great to hear that there are some good ones that you've experienced.
But I think the issue there, too, is, though, this is where something, you know, that I'm ordering, that I'm, in other words, you know, whatever. But in the case of where you really have a complaint, and then they take you through this whole thing,
right,
it's your forever to get to talk to somebody, I think that. And then the issue about the credit card companies is that, you know, the reality is that the credit card companies didn't want you to pay off your credit.
Mm-hmm.
They made lots of money off of it. And, you know, the push was to give more and more credit cards. Now they're afraid they're not going to get paid back. You know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, they've cut it. So anyway, good program.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Yes, hi. I want to echo the same things everybody's been saying about the credit card companies. I, too, had a situation where they called and said, or sent a letter and said, we think you have too much credit, and we're going to lower your credit as well for no reason. And, again, you know, in the, they were willing to hand out these things right and left when everything was economically good. They didn't care who had good credit or bad credit. So my whole point is I want to emphasize, I think it's really important to support local businesses. When you support local businesses, you know the people, they have a reputation in the community, they have a stake in having a reputation in the community. And, you know, I think that you get better customer service, you have people you can deal with face-to-face and not just answering systems and things like that. And so I just think it's really an interesting time right now where we've witnessed the situation on Wall Street and everywhere else. And I think that I would just emphasize to people, I think that this is a real, there's a real need to go back to support local businesses more, where you do get better customer service and you do have a much more personal contact with the people.
Okay. That's a really important point, because our guest, I think, would agree with you. Customer service is really important in a bad economy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I think that right now within the customer service industry as a whole, and again, it cuts across lots of different industries, so there's variations, but I think that there's a real, you know, turning point. And before the economic downturn, it was starting to evolve, and there was becoming more emphasis within corporations on customer service in general. And the question is that going to continue, or are they going to go back to the old ways, knee-jerk, you know, the first place to cut is customer service? And I've been reading the trade magazines in customer service, and one of the headlines I saw, which I thought was really good, was they said, you know, the last person to cut customer service wins. And I think that really reflects this idea that in a down economy, when presumably prices are going to be equaled out because everybody's going to cut their prices, service is really the only thing that differentiates one place from another. And so the companies who are able to take a long-term view and also see what I think a earlier caller mentioned was the investment in the long term, the cost of losing customers in an economy like this, you know, and trying to get new customers is more expensive. I think those are the companies that are going to survive, at least, if not thrive.
Yeah. I don't know if the caller is still there or not. You want to follow up? No.
Again, I want to emphasize, I think that you get the best customer service by dealing one-on-one with people in your community that you know.
Yeah, face-to-face.
That's great. It's not always possible with certain things that you've done, and you're right. But, you know, there is good customer service as well, and I agree, of course. I think, though, that it's also worth recognizing when you get good customer service elsewhere, you know, from a company like Zappos.com is a good one to talk about, just because they make customer service part of every single thing they do. And they don't have a storefront. They're on the Internet. But they have become...
That's a priority for them as customer service.
Right. And when you call, if they don't have what you want in stock, they will look it up on the Internet and get you another company and tell you where to buy it and give you the link and everything. So they can do some of what you're talking about, and they try really hard. They work very hard at that. So I think it's also important to support companies. Maybe they aren't in your neighborhood, but they are companies that, for whatever reason, you're not going to get that service in your neighborhood, and you can get it nationally or internationally, but they do put an emphasis on customer service.
And I agree. That is true.
You know, we as customers have some power in this. We do now, more so than ever, because of the Internet. So some of these companies who have gotten along and made money without really paying attention to customer service are having a harder time now. You know, the cable companies and the cell phone companies are recognizing that, you know, if they do something wrong, it can go out over the Internet, and then suddenly they have a huge PR problem. And that has happened to one of the ones in the book that I talked to, is Comcast. And, you know, they had some huge problems with a woman who went with a hammer to her Comcast office after they wouldn't pay attention to her. And she became a huge, you know, an overnight sensation. She was on Nightline and Good Morning America and Dr. Phil. And so, you know, that has become a little bit of a change in the equation. And so there is, you know, Twitter is also a way that people are talking about companies, and companies are listening. They're starting to recognize they have to monitor the internet, and part of it is just for their own reputations. And that, again, is where it comes back to the idea that customer service is the new marketing, and that is something that I think when, as you say, when local businesses have to do that because they see you the next day.
Yeah. Well, some of our local businesses are national retailers or, you know, whatever, service providers.
Right.
One of my favorites is Talbot's. I mean, I can call them and say, I've got an emergency. I have to go away now. Here's my size. I'll be in at 6 o'clock. And I had several things that were, that I said, here's the occasion, here's what I need, could you help me out? And sure enough, I was in and out of there, tried the stuff on, out of there, out the door, within 15 minutes. And also, they do a really neat thing online, although I don't know if they still do this or not, but if you have a problem online, you can contact, I think they call it a concierge, and you can type your question in there, and they respond.
That's amazing.
While you're there.
You know, another thought that comes to me that I, in the book, I ended up, I say there's this invisible wall between customers and the people who we deal with on the phone. And long story, it's in the book, but long story short, I had a very good experience, it turned out, when I ordered something from Office Depot, it wasn't delivered, and I called. And I ended up speaking to an agent of supervisor in Argentina named Pablo. And after a series of coincidences, and it turns out I was able to go to Argentina and meet Pablo. And I walked into the call center. It was all sanctioned by the company that he worked for was not Office Depot. It was an outsourcing company based in Denver, and they let me do this. And I walk in, and there's this, you know, conference room full of people, and there's this young guy, and at the end they say, and this is Pablo. And I looked at him. I said, Pablo. And he looks at me, and I think this is so telling. After 2.5 years answering Americans' phone calls, he looks at me, and he goes, I've never met a customer before. And he's a supervisor of customer service. So that sort of tells you how far removed we've come from that, you know, mom-and-pop store that we sort of hope that we can get every time we're trying to get customer service.
Yeah. Now, for this book, you went to emerging locales for call centers,
yes,
like Latin America and Africa. Does this say anything about the demand for customer service that, you know, we're now beyond India and the Philippines?
Well, yeah. I mean, what happens is customer service is kind of one of the cutting edges, and you can leave it to you whether that's good or bad, but it's one of the cutting edge things of customers of outsourcing. And so India now has become more sophisticated, and a lot of jobs, you know, are more high tech now. And so the Philippines has kind of taken India's place and is almost as big in call centers. And then what's happened is part of the backlash has been, you know, the different cultures handle customer service and have a different attitude in general towards customer service, and also have less affinity to the United States. So one of the places that seems to have more affinity with the United States, and we're more used to the accents, is Latin America. And so a lot of outsourcing is about lifting up people in developing nations. And so there is actually one side of it that, you know, helps people. And the people I met, I ended up going, as I said, to Buenos Aires. And that call center, everybody who worked there, were 3,000 people who worked there, they were all college educated, either in college or finished their degree. They were all bilingual. And their starting salaries, I believe, are about $2.75 an hour. And so on some level, you're getting a more educated employee, and the way they train them, you know, they train them in American culture. They have somebody there who had lived in America, and she just goes around, and her whole job is to listen to phone calls and monitor their accents and the idioms they use and the way they deal with Americans. And they really had to learn some cultural things about the United States and how we are. And so it's really interesting to see, it's sort of geopolitical, the way that call centers, you know, are emerging, and Africa is another place where it's up and coming. And it can be, I'm not saying it's all good, but it can be something that lifts people out of bad situations. I was in Cairo also, and that's, Egypt is trying to become like India, and there are some challenges there, but it's really fascinating when you look at it that way. At least I think it is.
Emily Yellen is our guest this afternoon. She's the author of Your Call Is Not That Important to Us, Customer Service and What It Reveals About Our World and Our Lives. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Good. Two comments. I found your statements about CEOs and how they reflect or not reflect, but determine the nature of calls, customer service, very interesting. David Brooks, one of the apologists for Wall Street, he's a writer for the New York Times, he makes the point that this great downturn or depression or recession or whatever it is, that the CEOs were confused. They didn't understand the complexity of global capitalism or so forth, that they're not crooked or that they weren't full of greed. It was just simply the system was too big, which would make me think that the CEOs are somewhat dumb. Okay, but in terms of Comcast, locally, they've dropped they've dropped the NASA station. They move parts of C-SPAN to much more high-end packages, much more expensive packages. It drives me personally up the wall. And just an aside, one of the members of the board of directors also sits with AIG, which is interesting. I'll just hang up and thought I'd just mention all that.
Okay. You want to comment on the comments?
Yeah. I mean, I think Comcast is a great example because they, and again, I'm not an apologist for any corporation, but Comcast is trying to turn things around. And I spoke to the vice president of customer service. We had a long talk. And he said to me, he admitted, we dropped the ball. We were so concerned with product development, with mergers and acquisitions, that sort of thing, that we dropped the ball in customer service. Plus, until recently, cable companies generally had monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to do this. And so a company like Comcast now has worked very hard. There's this vice president goes around and does a listening tour, like a politician, to cities to hear from employees, to hear from customers and everybody. And then they also have a new team that strictly monitors the Internet and what you say about Comcast on the Internet. They are there to answer, and they try to respond. And so, you know, that the irony is, though, if you're really having trouble with Comcast, maybe it means you don't have Internet access, and so you can't go on the Internet. another thing I want to say about CEOs, one of my favorite quotations from the book is, again, from FedEx. I spoke to Fred Smith, who's the founder and CEO, and he said, customer service has to be baked into an organization. You know, it can't be, as I say, it can't be sprinkled on top. And I think that's really important, is that everybody, not just people in a department, are really thinking of the customer when they're doing things, you know, establishing policy and systems for the company. And again, Zappos, the CEO there, said it's not just a department. So when Zappos figured out that they were based in San Francisco and their call center was costing a lot in San Francisco, instead of outsourcing it to India, they found a place in America that was good for, you know, they could get good real estate, good employees, and be able to afford it, and they moved the entire company to Las Vegas instead of just moving their customer service. And the CEO said, because we can't have our customer service so far removed from the executive offices. And in fact, he doesn't sit in an executive office. He sits in the middle of the call center, and that's a lot of where he does his work. And I think that's because he recognizes that that's the place where the company meets the customer, and if he stays in touch with that, he's going to be successful in responding, and that's an advantage.
Yeah. We're running down on time now, but before we wrap up, I want you to tell us about a fellow who emerges as a real hero in this book, someone who's no longer with us, Theodore Newton Vale.
Ah, yes. I went back. I decided that since about 75% of our customer service now is done over the telephone, I was going to look at the telephone, and I have a chapter where I look back at the history of the telephone. It's called What Would Alexander Graham Bell Say Now? And what I did was look, and he was one of the original CEOs, I guess it would be called, of AT&T. And the telephone was developed, and that company became the telephone company. And he was one of the first to say that, in a sense, the telephone company is a service. and he looked at it as a service. And he thought, you know, this is important that we respond to our customers' needs. It's very interesting. Well, he got in trouble with the financial guys that were running the company, and they fired him, or they got rid of him. And he said, you know, you can't be beholden to your shareholders. You have to be beholden to your customers. And for about 20 years, AT&T went on. This was around the turn of the century. And then they called him back because they had had such horrible troubles, and the company had gone, you know, in the wrong direction. And he turned it around, and they started an award in his name, which still goes on today for telecommunication workers who go above and beyond the call of duty to provide service. And so, yes, he's definitely a hero in the book, and it's really interesting to look back. I'll include one more little tidbit. It turns out that cursing at an operator was made illegal around the turn of the century. And actually, in St. Louis, there was a doctor who he was arrested, put on trial, and found guilty of using abusive language toward an operator, and he was fined $5. So, and another in Cincinnati, somebody said, I hope I can say this on the air, damn your telephone. And he was sued, and it became illegal to curse at operators. I don't think that's the same as it is today. So,
yeah. Also in that vein, I want to mention one more little fun thing from the book, and that is the Reverend Will Bowen.
Yes.
And he had a quit complaining campaign. And he told you, wouldn't it be better if a customer service person would say something along the lines of, how can we work together to get you what you need? But he's also of the school of thought that, you know, we have to be civil to the folks who are taking our complaints.
It's true. It's true. And that's a great part. I looked at the nature of complaining, and he does. He has a campaign to sort of stop complaining. But he's a real smart guy. And yes, I think one of the things I came away with, too, is that we as customers have to take a little responsibility, because something goes out the window when we're on the phone and we're not face-to-face with people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hate to admit it, but I've certainly raised my voice and probably been unreasonable. And so, you know, there are limitations. What I do now, and this is maybe a place to end on, what I do now is when I recognize that this employee does not have the authority to do any more to help me, I say that. I say, you know, I understand that you have done everything you possibly can. And, in fact, I was talking to somebody in India the other day, and I said to her, but is there anyone in the entire world who could solve this problem? And she said, just a moment, ma'am. She put me on hold. And then a couple of seconds later, somebody in Florida came on, and he solved my problem.
Mm.
And if I had just screamed at her, she probably would have hung up on me. So It is worthwhile for us to realize that those are real human beings on the other end of the line, just like they need to realize we are human beings with time constraints and needs on this end of the line.
Mm. Well, thanks for taking our call, Emily.
Oh, it's been so much fun, and it was so important to me.
Emily Yellen has been our guest in this portion of the program. She is the author of Your Call Is Not That Important to Us, Customer Service and What It Reveals About Our World and Our Lives. The book is published by the Free Press, and our guest is online at www.emilyyellen.com. And Yellen is spelled Yellin. It's 1:53. Settlement prices should be in from Chicago and Kansas City. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. Let's take a look at those numbers as they finished up in Chicago. On this Tuesday afternoon, futures like this, the May contract and the wheat pit today, a 564.5 high, low at 538.75. A settlement price for the day at 539.75, 17.25 lower in the May wheat contract in Chicago. July futures, the harvest month there, had a high price today at 576.25, low at 550.75. A settlement price, 551.75, down 17. And a quarter in September. 601.25 the high, the low at $5.77. Settled at 577.5, down 16.75. In Kansas City, the harvest month July, 13 cents the loss at $6.75 for the hard red winter wheat. Back in Chicago in the corn pit, May futures settled 9.25 lower, the high at 404.75, the low at 395.5, a settlement price 396.25, down below $4, 9.25 lower. for the May corn futures. July contract 415, the high, the low at 405 and three quarters, settled 406 and a half, down 9 1/4. In September, 424, the high, the low at 414 and three quarters, settlement price at $4.16, down 8 3/4. And the December contract, new crop corn, 436 and a quarter, the high, the low at 426 and a half, a settlement price for the December corn futures, $4.27 and a half, down 9 1/4. March futures there, 439, down 9. And the May 2010 contract down 9 as well at 446 and a half. May oats, $1.99, down a penny. July down 1 at 208 and 1/4. Soy complex, May beans, $10.06. The top, the bottom at 987 and a quarter. That contract settled 4 1/2 cents lower. May futures at 989 and a half, down 4 1/2 on the settlement. July contract for the beans, 1005, the high, the low at 986 and 3/4. Settlement price at 988, down 5 1/2 in the August. 979 and a quarter, the high, the low at 64. Settlement price at $9.65, down 6 cents. September futures, 943, the high, the low at 27. Settled $9.31, down 6. And November beans, 923, the high, the low at 903 and 3/4. Settlement price at 908 and a half, down 3 and a half cents. January futures, 930 and a quarter, the high, the low at 12. Settlement price at 15 and a half. Settled down 6 at 915 and a half for the January beans 2010 contract. May bean meal at 306.20, down 20 cents today. July at 302.20, down 90. May soybean oil, 34.84, 15 cents lower. And July contract finished at 35.12, down 14. I'll return at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, 9 1/2 minutes away now with closing mark report, when we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. And Harry Cooney will join us to talk about the agricultural energies and those lower prices for crude oil that happened today. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Now let's take a look at the livestock contracts and how they fared today in Chicago. April live cattle, the high 86.85, the low 86.12 1/2, the settlement 86.27 1/2, down 25. June 84.35, the high 83.70, the low 83.75, the settlement finishing down 62 1/2. August 85 even, the high 84.65, the low 84.67 1/2, the settlement that down 40. October 88.95, the high 88.45, the low 88.72 1/2, the settlement that up 2 1/2. April feeder cattle, 96.35, the high 95.90, the low, the settlement 96.22 1/2, up 27 1/2. May 97.60, the high 96.85, the low, the settlement 97.12 1/2, that down 32 1/2. August feeder cattle, 99.77 1/2, the high 99 even, the low, the settlement 99.42 1/2, down 17 1/2. September, $100.15, the high, the low, 99.50, the settlement 99.90, that down 30. April lean hogs, 59.35, the high 58.95, the low 59.17 1/2, the settlement that down 55. May, 73.25, the high 71.62 1/2, the low, the settlement 73.22 1/2, up 52 1/2. June lean hogs, 74 even, the high 72.05, the low, the settlement 73.45, that up 70. July, 74.97 1/2, the high, the low 73.25, the settlement 74.22 1/2, that up 40. And May bellies, 89.67 1/2, the high, the low today was 88.30, the settlement was 89.67 1/2, that finished off 12 1/2 cents. The Dow is currently off 189 points at 77.95. Make that down 181 points. The NASDAQ is down 42 at 1565. The S&P 500 off 18 at 818. And the price of crude is down 190. Nearby month in New York on the Mercantile Exchange, trading at 48.95, the nearby crude oil contract. Coming up on 2 o'clock, this is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson, our technical director this afternoon, Henry Frain. Today is Election Day, and AM 580 will bring you coverage during newscasts throughout the day and results this evening following the BBC, the NewsHour, and City Club Forum. So be sure to tune in all day for the latest information here on the Information Advantage. We're also at 90.9 FM HD.